maybe Fabian, Pat, and those of you who know the rest of the gang, start some conversation while I put down my headset and call Michael on a different line to see what happens. Would that be okay?
Yeah, we'll talk among ourselves.
I'm not prepared at all to host the meeting. I mean, that's Pat. Are you?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. So I don't know whether everybody who is now on this call actually followed the exchanges which led to this effort. Maybe you could say a few words about how we came to talk about the revision of CL.
I'm not really authoritative on this, but my understanding is that the ISO process requires either that we sort of reiterate our support for the standard or that we revise it. And I'm not quite sure of the formal distinction between these two, or else it gets withdrawn. So as I understand the situation at ISO, and I don't claim to understand it very well, standards have a sort of half-life or something, and they will, if no one steps up to refresh to say yes, it should still be there, then it ceases to be a standard. So we had reached that point, apparently.
Hi, this is Denise Wurzel, the WG2 convener. So, I might then to help you with some of that explanation if you need it. It is true that standards have to be reaffirmed on both a national basis in terms of whether a country is going to continue to adopt that standard officially, and then also on an international basis, they go through a periodic review. I don't believe this standard is up for a periodic review, but there has been discussion that a corrigendum was needed, and the existing editor had sort of retired after the last time this was published, which was maybe three years or so ago. So if we don't have an editor and a request for a corrigendum comes up, you know, we really can't refresh the standard. So Michael has stepped in to try to help lead discussion around this standard and progress it if need be, or, you know, just be available at least if changes are requested in the future. Does that help?
When the topic of the idea of revising the standard came up, there were a lot of ideas that had been floated and then sort of put on a shelf because it wasn't time to revise the standard that came back into public attention. And so we have a whole lot of issues all of a sudden being discussed.
Yeah, and I think at least on the mailing list, there seemed to be agreement that we will try to achieve a triage here, that we create a short list of the things that have to be changed. And there are some things which are just technically need to be fixed. And then make a list of the things which we would like to change, but we don't consider mandatory, and if we don't achieve it in this revision, then that's fine. And then, of course, a list of the things which we just don't want to do because it's beyond scope, which, you know, anything, at least in my opinion, which would radically change the semantics of CL, for example, should, in my opinion, be beyond that. So I think that would be the goal of this conversation, to at the end come up with a list like that.
But who's that speaking just then?
It's Fabian.
Oh, Fabian, thank you. Yeah, I agree, by the way.
Peter Yam here. I'm back, but I was only able to leave a message to Michael.
Peter, Denise had some thoughts about, as the SC32 convener, she had some thoughts on this. We might want to bring her in to see exactly what the status of the current thing is. I believe that we're at a five-year review point and must do something. But
that part, I definitely want Michael to be in.
So let me just pop in on that. This is Denise.
Hi, Denise.
Hi. So it is true that at a five-year review point, and gosh, time flies when you're having fun. Maybe it has been 3 years or 5 years. But a decision about whether the standard should continue is taken by international vote, and then each country has to submit their perspective. They take a vote as to whether it should be enhanced, whether it should be stabilized and just out there as a standard, or whether it needs to be withdrawn because it's outdated. So this group, because we don't represent a national body, can't actually submit a response, but you could through one of the national body members, and Canada is a member, and so is the U.S., you know, and I'm a member of the U.S. committee, so through that mechanism, I could take your opinions back, for example, to the U.S., and Michael could take them back to Canada and influence those national body votes on that viability of the standard.
Absolutely.
Does that make sense?
Oh, yes, absolutely, but you, we probably want you to repeat this when Michael is with us. I hope he can join us fairly soon. Since, I mean, there are names of people who actually don't show up on Ontolog sessions as regularly as some of the rest, maybe we could take the opportunity to go around the room, maybe have each person give a short introduction of himself or herself. Right. Let's go down the list on the chat, and maybe each person spent 20-30 seconds give a short intro about herself, where he or she comes from, in connection to this work. That would be great. Adrian.
Yes. So hi, I'm Adrian Paschke. I'm a professor at Free University in Berlin, in Germany. And I'm active in the rule area as an editor, for example, in the W3C RIS standard for the production rules dialect, also in RuleML for the reaction RuleML technical group, and the Oasis in legal RuleML, which is a new standard effort for defining legal rules. And I'm also interested in this area of event processing, where I'm one of the founding members of the Event Processing Technical Society and the reference architecture group there. So my interest is in rule technologies, and that's why I'm also quite interested in common logic.
Thank you. Alex?
Oh, sorry. Hi. Okay, I'm working on Geological Institute of Russian Academy of Science, and we prepare some ontologies for petrology, and one of our tools may be common logic, because we use tool, mathematical tool like first order logic and around, and maybe description logics.
Thank you, Alex. Anne?
Okay, great. My name is Anne Fessen. I am a biologist at the Marine Biological Laboratory, and I'm participating in the Semantics and Ontologies group, at which is a part of the National Science Foundation EarthView project, and I'm very interested in applying semantics to biological uses, and I'm here to learn more about ontologies and how they work. That's it.
Thank you, Anne. Christoph.
Hi, I'm Christoph Lange. I'm one of the authors of DOL, the Distributed Ontology Language. DOL comprises common logic as one language in which the modules of a distributed ontology can be written, and DOL is currently being standardized with the ISO. This is work in progress. So any changes to common logic might affect the conformance of common logic with the overall DOL framework, and therefore these might require adaptations to the ongoing standardization of DOL. That's why I'm interested in this topic.
Thank you, Christoph. David. David Witten.
Yes, my name is David Witten. Since I had some difficulty remembering things, you know, I would encourage everybody who's giving their bio to please type in information about themselves into the chat, because That way spelling errors and such in your head can be solved because they're typed in properly. And also, I noticed a lot of background noise, so I encourage everybody to go on mute when they're not actually talking. Now, about myself. I'm a computer person, medical informaticist, working in the VISTA system from the Veterans Administration. It's a EHR, EMR, hospital information system, been around for about 30 years. My interest in ontologies and common logic specifically drew from the fact that the VISTA system is a data-driven or data dictionary-driven system, which incorporates basically a type system similar to programming languages, but it sorely needs to have a lot more semantics in it. And I see common logic as a way of, as an interlingua, so to speak, to add this semantics to our data dictionary and to our system as a whole, since the system is driven by programs reading data, such as in the data dictionary. I just mentioned earlier, I'm now working for the state of North Carolina, working on on VISTA implementation for them. So,
great. Thank you, David. Denise.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes, great.
Okay. If I am on a speakerphone, so I want to be sure it wasn't echoing. I actually am participating in this Ontolog group on an ongoing basis as a representative from the U.S. National Cancer Institute, Center for Bioinformatics, and I work specifically in the Semantic Operations Group. So I have a keen interest in ontologies and data semantics in particular. I am also attending this meeting in another role, which is the SC32 WG2 ISO Committee convener, who is responsible for the development and maintenance of the 24707 Common Logic Standard. So I'm responsible for convening meetings, setting up the agenda, helping editors as they negotiate the pattern that's followed for publishing standards. And so I'm here kind of in a duplicate role today, one because it has been raised that Common Logic may have some enhancements that are required, and so I've put some time on our agenda that's coming up in October for us to discuss it as a working group, and so I'm here for that, but I also do regularly attend the Ontolog meetings.
Thank you very much, Denise. Elizabeth?
Thank you. I'm involved with this group since 2009-10 when we conducted together the Futures of Ontologists study. And I'm in more as an observer and learner since I'm a former programmer analyst and presently futurist, but I keep on being amazed and thankful to this group for everything I learn. And it helps me being up to date of what is going on in this cutting-edge domain. So I'm more as an observer and learner, as I said, but try to keep up. And, sorry for not being able to contribute too much or at all, I'm extremely thankful, and I wouldn't miss any meeting for anything except if I really have to. So thanks again.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Fabian?
Hello, my name is Fabian Neuhaus. I work for the National Institutes of Standards and Technology, and I have been working on common logic for a few years now, in particular the semantics of modules, but in general interested in the semantics of common logic. And that's my main motivation, just academic interest at this time.
Thank you, Bobby and Frank.
I'm Frank Tolkien. I spent 30-odd years at Lawrence Berkeley Laboratory, National Laboratory in Berkeley, where I did research in scientific and statistical databases, and then more recently in semantic web technologies and various sorts of metadata standards, including ISO 11179 on LA with peace. My current interests run to applications of ontologies and relay systems for medical applications, electronic health records and medical protocols. And I believe, memory serves correctly, I wasn't particularly active in it, but I believe I was around when the Common Logic Standard was adopted by LA and recommended to ISO.
Thank you, Frank.
Which was editor of it.
Thank you. Harold?
I'm at the National Research Council, Canada, and I'm also at the University of New Brunswick. I have worked in knowledge interchange formats for several years when KIF came actually up, and also in functional logic integration, and that's very close to common logic, where also functions and relations are treated very similarly. Recently, I have helped the WCC RIF, and as Adrian Paschke mentioned also, I'm working in RuleML and more recently in OASIS, legal RuleML. Also together with Tara, who will speak soon, we are very interested in this XVL and wonder if we could help from the RuleML side and from our experience to come up with an improved XML syntax for common logic.
Thank you, Harold. That was Harold Bowley. Ken? Ken Slosky.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead,
okay.
Ken.
I'm a professor at Northeastern University. Been involved in ontology and Atlantic Web for many years. My main interest here is in interoperability with the various semantic standards, as well as the Open Ontology Repository, so mapping, translations, interoperability, all interest of mine in this particular case. Thanks.
Thank you, Ken. Oliver Kutz?
Yeah, hi, Oliver Kutz. I work at the University of Bremen in Germany. The main reason I'm here is, as Christoph explained, the role of common logic within the DOL language, the distributed ontology language. This project is led not only by Christoph and me, also by Michael Gruninger and by Till Mosakowski. Before I did some work on the description logic in the OWL language and a lot of work on modular ontology in general. Thank you.
Thank you, Oliver. Pat Hayes.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead, Pat.
Yeah. Well, I've been working in sort of logics and ontologies and for quite a long time now. I wrote most of the actual text of the current standard, but it represents joint work with a whole bunch of people, especially Chris Menzel, who should be here, and I'll have his ass when he find out why he isn't. I've also, I should say I'm in Florida, at a small research institute down on the Florida coast, HMC. I'm also, I worked on the RDF and OWL standards for the W3C, and I'm still on the, RDF2, working group, which is revising the RDF standard. So I, to some extent, my experience on the, W3C standardization efforts has informed my, approach to common logic and some of the, issues that arise there. One last thing about common logic, the sort of version of it anyway that's in the current standard is, I think I can speak for Chris, and certainly for myself here, we've discovered that common logic is way more powerful and expressive and elegant than we thought it was when we invented it. So I feel rather protective towards it, I have to say, because I think it's turned out to be more of a diamond than we realized. Okay.
Well said, Pat. Thank you. Are you trying to call Chris on the side? He did say he was going to be here.
Yeah.
If you please, Pat. Okay, moving on to Paul. Paul Tyson.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes,
okay.
I can hear you.
I work in data architecture in the aerospace industry. I'm very interested in using XEL in conjunction with RDF and Sparkle for cross-platform data integrity checks and further applications in business rules and helping enhance business processes.
Okay. Thank you, Paul. I'm next. My name is Peter Yim. I run the infrastructure at Ontolog, and I try to do my best to serve the ontology community with whatever I can do. I believe it's very important. That's why. So, next, Simon Sparrow.
Yes, sir. Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, Simon.
Again. I'm an information slash library scientist slash I play an ontologist near a TV. But, I'm interested in common logic and IKL as basically a non-proprietary replacements for languages like SciCal, particularly in features like the sort of higher order but really first order quantifying over predicates that make it so much easier to express some of the semantics that I found very difficult to express in the less expressive languages. So I'm really interested in seeing some of the things that are being proposed and discussed moved into, I guess, CLTL 2.2.
Michael here.
Hi, Michael.
Sorry,
we're going around the room.
Okay, yeah, no, I had some horrible technical difficulties here. I finally got everything rebooted.
We're so happy you're here. We are almost done with going around the room. Pat is trying to contact Chris Menzel, who also said he was going to be here and whom we're also missing. So moving on, so sign into the chat, then you'll see where we are with the, the intros. Tara F.
Thanks, Peter. I'm basically a mathematician with in my background, working for many years in quantitative modeling. More of the differential equation and probabilistic analysis side of things. And just in the last few years became interested in KR for the purpose of encoding metadata of data sets, particularly the ones that would be coming from the sort of simulations that I worked on for many years. And particularly interested in those simulations of related to geographical data, such as climate modeling and so on. And so that I actually got into this because of some of the shortcomings that have been noted in XCL, because I went to start using that for such metadata and was informed by Pat Hayes that it was really not suitable for use, and that sidetracked me off into the world of syntax development, which I have now for a while been working with RuleML, and most recently on extension of RuleML for the legal domain.
Great, thank you, Tara. Terry.
Yeah, I'm retired from Lockheed and IBM, but for many years I was active in data standards, including the X.500 directory standard, which takes us back some. I was a participant, kind of a hanger-on at the SC32 meetings for Common Logic and the metadata registry standards. And currently I'm on the TC-37 committee that's looking into DAL with all the other guys that I've met before. That's all.
Thank you, Terry. Todd Schneider.
Todd Schneider, I work at Raytheon. I do stuff. I'm coming to this meeting so I can hopefully learn more about the nuances of common logic and hope to promote to supplant things like OWL. Thank you.
Thank you. Going back, Bob in Teagarden joined us after we passed the ENC. Bobbin?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, Bobbin.
I'm Bobbin Teagarden. I'm a system architect doing architectures with agents who think in ontologies, and I've been using RDFNL, and John Soa said that Pat Hayes had actually proven that L was a superset of these, and I was wondering when I could migrate to something like CL. So I'm learning.
Thank you, Bobbin. I can see on the voice line that Perfitra are with us who are not on the chat. If you want to say hello, please do.
Sure. I'm Perfitra, engineer. I'm a computer science person. I work as enterprise architect. I'm interested in ontology, data architecture, big data, and SOA at this time. I like to attend these meetings and contribute, probably learn.
Thank you, Petra. So I'll turn the meeting over to Michael, who probably could start us off with introducing himself, though he doesn't need much introduction in this circle. Also, Michael, before you joined us, Terry was suggesting that Denise Walsall, who leads the SC32, could maybe give us a sort of preface on where things stand with ISO 24707. So maybe after your intro, you might want to.
Right, that'd be a good idea.
All yours, Michael.
Okay, thanks, Peter. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Michael Gruninger, professor at the University of Toronto. And I've been involved with ontologies for quite a few years, and in particular with Common Logic, since we resurrected the project back in 2000. Just a little bit of history. I had been working on the Process Specification Language project, which was another ISO standards effort. And when it came time to presenting the axioms of the ontology that was part of that standard, ISO said, well, you should be writing these axioms using another ISO standard. And at the time, KIF, the Knowledge Interchange Format, there had been a document floating around saying that, oh, it was a draft international standard within ISO, and we were using that. And to my surprise, found out that actually it hadn't actually been put forward for standardization. So that was around the year 2000, and about that time we essentially resurrected the project that had kind of died off and formally started it within ISO. It is part of JTC1, which is the Joint Technical Committee in ISO and Information Technology, and within the subcommittee SC32, which deals with metadata. And we had several initial meetings in 2000 and kind of carried on. I did a stint, early stint as the editor, before passing it on to Harry DeLugach, who carried it all the way to standardization in 2007. And at this point, every ISO project has a, after 5 years, has the potential for review, and that's where we are in 2012. Denise, did you have other comments you wanted to add about that in particular?
Not really. I did make a few comments before you joined just about the overall process and that we were going to be talking about this in Krakow, October, at a meeting. But I'll pipe in if something comes up that I think I should inject.
Right. And so, for people who are joining, this won't be joining for the first time. This won't be a kind of overview of Common Logic. It won't be an introduction to Common Logic. It appears that there is significant interest, and I think we can schedule a later session where we do kind of go talk about, you know, what is a little kind of intro to Common Logic, bring together some of the people who are using Common Logic in various ways, people working on tools. I think that would be a great session, but we'll be having that, I think, at a later date. The purpose for today's session, as kind of discussed in the overview, in the invitation, is that the standard, the Common Logic, which is ISO 24707, is up for its 5-year review, and there's an opportunity during this review period to propose changes, corrections, extensions to the standard. And that's the purpose of this meeting, is to come to an agreement over the scope of this revision for ISO. So I have volunteered to be editor again, carrying the baton from Harry. And so the purpose for today is to come to some agreement on what issues will be addressed in this revision. This is just the beginning of the work that will be done in the revision. Again, this is just identifying the scope. It'll be over the coming months that we actually do the hard technical work of addressing these issues and, you know, coming up with some consensus on their solution. So I'm just going to paste here. So these are some of the issues that have been raised up to this point. These are ones that I extracted from the email listing, and we may identify others within the context of today's meeting. And we don't have to necessarily adopt all of these within the scope. I just want to post a comment, a quote from Ed Barkmeyer at NIST. These are the words of Ed, not my words. So I would suggest that the ISO work item for revision, which we're discussing today, which would establish the scope of the project, should identify mandatory elements of this project, which is the revision, as well as optional elements that we, the working group consists of everyone on the call today and other people who have expressed interest, can decide whether to address these issues based on timing, resources, and impact on the different user communities that are working with Common Logic. So he was saying there's nothing wrong with having an optional laundry list with, you know, say 27 items on it. But what we want to do is identify, again, what are the mandatory ones. So when the mandatory stuff is done, some of the items on the list will have been contributed or at least contributed within a few months, and the rest can be relegated if resources are later found. And so this is a nice, I like his kind of position statement there. And so, like I say, today we are kind of focusing on these particular, see, the 9 issues I extracted. I think what we can maybe start off with is maybe we can have a phase here where we can do some brainstorming on any additional issues that people feel should be included, which have not yet been discussed in the email list so far. And I think maybe, as Denise had mentioned earlier, the objective will be I will collect all of these issues, put them into the ISO template, and be presenting these virtually. I will be presenting them virtually at the Krakow meeting in October, and that will constitute, again, the scope for this revision project. So there will be a window of opportunity to, like after today's session, to try to include some more, but I really want to try to get the scope so we can at least be presenting the nature of the revision project. Are there any comments on that?
Yes, I have just a clarification comment, Michael. I typed some information into the chat, but I think it's worth mentioning in case folks aren't reading. Just to clarify again the process and some of the language that you're using to describe this group, as a member of the Canadian National Body, you can hold sessions to discuss editing requirements or, you know, changes to the Common Logic standard, but you can't really call it a working group or a study group or anything that, that has a connotation like that to it, because those can only be comprised of people who are actually members of national bodies who have, you know, paid dues, and their national bodies have one vote per country. So the meeting in October is officially an ICE working group meeting, but what I suggest is that you, as the member and editor, you know, are convening people that you consider experts to get input for you, and that's fine. But I just wanted to say that, you know, if someone wanted to be part of the actual working group, which you as editor are accountable to, then they would have to join ISO. And what I mean by that is, if you take something forward to the working group, the official working group, and you don't reach consensus, it doesn't matter whether this group has had reached consensus or thinks it needs to be in or out, because they don't really have a vote. Does that make sense?
Yeah, thank you for the clarification.
Okay, good. And I think, by the way, it's absolutely excellent, and I applaud you for getting together experts to give you some input. And I don't discourage that at all, but I just want you to be careful about how it's characterized.
Okay, right. So as we begin the discussion phase of the meeting, I didn't present any prepare any slides, because I'm not presenting anything in this meeting. I'm kind of merely trying to facilitate and coordinate, the proposals for the revision. And so for the rest of the meeting, we are really just kind of doing brainstorming and discussion. There, if people notice on the chat, there is, on the right-hand side, you can see everyone's names there. And on the lower right-hand side, there's a little hand icon. If you could use that as a way, there's a queue at the very top there. Peter's now first in the queue. And I'll kind of manage all the comments that way, as well as anything that's going into the chat window. Peter, use your hand up.
Yes, Chris Menzel has joined us since we stopped introducing people, and also there's someone from San Francisco who called in. I mean, I assume that's not Chris. And we should ask if anyone is on the call who has not is say hello and gave an introduction. Maybe we can just do that just for completeness. Chris, maybe?
Yeah, what would you like me to say?
Tell us who you are, in case some of us don't know who you are.
Yeah, Chris Menzel, professor at Texas A&M, worked with Pat and Mike, Michael and others on the initial development of Common Logic, and mostly interested in the technical side and some of the logical issues that arise. I'm a professor of philosophy. I teach, and my research is in mathematical and philosophical logic.
Thank you, Chris. I mean, he's always my role model for keeping everybody in this straight and narrow. So, all right, back to Michael.
Okay. So far, I just want to just bring people's attention. So I had the list here, A through I, the nine items again that I extracted from the email list, and kind of I guess in the context of the prioritization that I mentioned Ed suggesting. Pat has kind of given us a position here. The points that really are essential, that we definitely need to include, are fixing the list of syntactic errors that have already been identified. I mean, there is a document of that kind, I think, that we have discussed on the email list. I have a copy of that, which are the list of syntactic errors that we have identified. So that's, of course, an obvious thing that we need to fix. The second point, the correction and completion of the XML syntax in Annex C, and finally, the clarification of conformance conditions. So I would definitely agree with that these are definitely mandatory items. Pat goes on to say the highly desirable items would include namespacing, the modification of semantics to allow the existence of definitional extensions in Common Logic, just lost the list here. And then the questions about segregated dialects and interoperability that John Soa has raised. And then finally, the ones that are not particularly important, the recent discussion the question of perhaps adding additional connectives, and also the issue of additional concrete syntaxes that could be included in the annex, such as the infix proposal. And personally, I would kind of agree on those two items. I don't know if those are necessarily really need to be in the extension, in the scope of the revision. And then Chris added on a tenth item, which would be a proof theory for the basic common logic semantics. So are there any other kind of comments on that? I agree more or less with Pat's ranking, although I would put namespacing as something that we really do need to add in there. I think namespacing is essential. And given the work on ontology mappings, I also think that the point C is also something that's essential. And Till Moskowski has already, together with Fabian, have already proposed a solution to that issue. So that can be something that's already in there. Any comments I wanted, are there any points that people want to see in the scope of the revision that have not been covered by these 10 points, these 10 issues that have already been raised? Okay. Fabian, did you want to elaborate on that point? Go ahead, Fabian.
Yes. Bill is unfortunately not on the call. Just to say who he is, Bill is working for HiFleet, which is a database company which actually uses Common Logic as their main language. And he identified two needs they would have or would like to have. And one is just a query language. So right now CL doesn't have any query language associated with it. And this is not difficult to do. It's just that would be useful to have something in the standard which standardizes it so that if there are two different implementations of CL, and then the queries can be exchanged from implementation to implementation, that there is just a standard terminology. And the other thing that he asked me to do is asked me to suggest is an appendix with a set of names which allow to express structural descriptive names. Now, I really don't know much about that because I have not used them myself, but it's basically a way of characterizing the structure of the sentence in the object language, and it's another form of nominalization in that sense. And the good thing, the useful thing for him is that it allows him to query about the axioms. So you can basically use the system to find all the axioms which are about a certain predicate or about a certain predicate. And it wouldn't require any change to the semantics. It's just a list of terms which can be put in an appendix. Another thing that I haven't put down is, isn't covered by the list of things, is the fixing the semantics of modules, which Pat and I wrote a paper on, which is, should be included because it's broken currently. And I think Simon said something about comments, which I can only, I think everybody will agree with, that needs to be fixed too as well.
Issue of comments. Could you elaborate on exactly what the issue would be there?
It's painful to write comments.
So no, but
if you have written long CL texts, so you know that.
Yeah.
So we will it would be nice to have just the kinds of comments that you can write in a programming language.
Okay, so this is, we're talking about the syntax. I just want to clarify. I agree.
Yes.
It's an issue. So yeah, syntax.
Michael.
Yes.
I think Fabian has already gone up to L, so you should start with like M N O P.
Okay, sorry. I didn't see L.
The two things that are interesting brought up. Yeah.
Right. A quick comment on comments. I think you'll find that the issue and proposals for fixing the comments are already there in the list of suggested updates to the standard. We had quite extensive correspondence on that a couple of years ago.
And this is the defect report that Cameron Ross assembled. Yes, I should have posted that.
But I think that's coming from your A, you know, existing syntax corrections.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, issue, I'll just clarify. Issue A refers to the defect report initiated by Cameron Ross. And it includes recommendations to change the recommendations for the syntax of comments.
I have another suggestion, and it's definitely in the optional bin. We might want to reconsider whether, right now we have one general way of annotating things, which is called comment.
Uh-huh.
So the question is whether we want to allow for more for a general way of introducing your own annotation terminology in some form.
That's a good point.
Which should not, again, not shouldn't really change the semantics very much. It's just, you know.
So it's more general approaches to annotation of CL text.
You know, for example, sometimes I might want to say something as a definition, or write down in a systematic way what the sources are for my axioms. Right now, the only way of doing that is, you know, lump it all in under comments, but if you would have a mechanism which would allow us to control, you know, add the, not in the standard itself, define these notions, but rather put an infrastructure in place so that people can use other annotation symbols.
Like footnotes or endnotes.
Sorry?
Like footnotes or endnotes, out of line. Guys, comments are generally thought of as something that's in line, you know, interrupts the flow of the logic or the thing you're looking at.
Well, you that is a good point.
An out-of-line annotation methodology, right?
Well, I think you're making a different point, which is also a good point. But what I meant is have some allow people to have annotation vocabulary, use their own annotation vocabulary, so that you can have tool support which distinguishes, let's say, between the definitions and the source information and all of that. And right now we don't have that. We just have, the only structure we have is CL comment, and then you add a string. And there would be nice to have some more informed annotations mechanism.
Harold, you have a comment.
Right, I agree. So the common logic comments mechanism could be generalized to allow interoperation at least on that level of being CL expressions as something to be indexed by metadata and combined with other languages. And the semantic that is looking into a standard for metadata, and for instance, schema.org is a recent approach. I give the URLs here, so we could look into that.
So this would be in the context of issue, what we've identified as issue N, more general approaches to annotation of CL text.
Right.
Okay. Okay. I just want to come back to Fabian's relay of Bill Anderson's suggestion of query language. In general, I'm not sure if in common logic in the common standard itself, you want to make the distinction between common logic and the query language. Although I could see how, if in particular, in terms of conformance, if there are certain implementations that do make a distinction, that would influence the kind of the conformance of that particular other language or that other implementation, to say that you know, there are certain syntactic restrictions on the query. Do you think that's what Bill meant when he said a query language? Because I would really not want to have a separate query language built into the language.
Well, may I answer that?
Yeah.
The question is, if you have a database you want to query and you have only CL expressions as they are right now, you don't really, you know, I mean, you can get yes or no as a response. You can't get a list of, you know, if you have a query like find me all the things which are have a birthday of you know, have a given birthday, then you, there's no way of expressing that. I mean, for Prickle, we have just used a different keyword, which is find, and it basically follows the same syntax as an existential quantifier.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but the result is not true or false, but rather set of variable bindings. The advantage of that approach is that you don't need any syntactic distinction between variables and other things. It preserves the fact that everything stays as a name. But, you know, other approaches would have dedicated variables. I don't really care, but what the syntactic solution is. But I think it's useful to have a way of not only of formulating a query which is not just responded to with true or false in a system. And it would be, we should have some standardized idea about what the result is. So for example, you could think of it as return, or what the system is returned could be variable bindings where the variable bindings consist of the name of the variable and this designated value. But it also, you could just return basically a relationship, and implicitly by the ordering of the variables in the query, the assignment is given. So, you know, that these are the kinds of questions that we would have to solve. And again, I don't think it makes a big difference what we choose. It's just we need to choose one.
Okay. So just kind of a procedural comment here. So when you use the hand to put yourself in the queue, if your comment has been kind of issued, you can click the hand icon again to drop you off the queue. So Harold, do you have another comment, or we'll move on to Pat?
Short one. So I agree that query language should have different kinds of variables, distinguishing local and global variables for that query, and that was done a long time ago. For I'll give the URL in a moment.
Okay. Pat.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I think we should be very, very careful. We invented there was a demand for query language for RDF, and quite reasonably, the world needed it. And four of us sat down one afternoon, basically, and wrote for defining a perfectly adequate, simple query language, which had, you know, two kinds of variables, so that you could decide which variables were the pattern variables, and then bound and so on. And if you look at the Sparkle, the final product, which is available at that URL, our language is basically defined in section 2.1. And all the rest of the document is built on top of that, because people who want query languages wanted it. And it includes things like specifying the order in which the results are given, being able to count the number of bindings, being able to put filters on the values and say I only want results whose values fall in a certain range, being able to say I want things that bind this but don't bind that, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. My point is only that if we go along this road, very complicated world waiting for us. I think it will take us a long time, years literally, to come out of the other end.
Yeah, I share your apprehension, definitely. Any other comments on this issue of query language as an issue?
Well, this is David Whitten. Pat, could you address the question of whether the Sparkle query language could be modified in some easy way to address common logic?
I think we'd better start with SQL and modify it, because SQL is much closer to first order logic. Sparkle really is already RDF. But certainly, I mean, I think any query language that, how do I put this? Users who badly want a query language are going to be people who are very familiar with SQL and its idiosyncrasies, and are going to want something that isn't too violently different from that. So that would be a good place to go and look. So read the SQL specs and then come back and see if you want to do it.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I like Frank's suggestion that this could actually be a separate project.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be something that is kind of, it's not in the scope of common logic, but it's definitely something that, you know, if enough people find to be useful, could itself be its own project.
Absolutely. That's essentially my point, stated differently. Thank you.
Great idea,
Pat,
Frank.
Pat, could you document that one point about starting from SQL rather than Sparkle onto the chat so that...
Okay, will do.
Fabian?
Since Pat said the core of the Sparkle query language was done on an afternoon, why don't we go with the route of putting this on the optional list, which should go anyway, and if it turns out that the people that we find three people who can solve the problem on an afternoon to a degree that it gives us a primitive query language, and they can agree on that, and then we could use that, and then we have a primitive query language. And if it turns out that there are too many people in the room who want to do all kinds of complicated stuff like filters and all of that, and we can't finish it in time, well, then it's not going to be in the standard because, as you know, following Ed's proposal, everything which isn't done within the time frame when the mandatory things are done, then it doesn't end up in the standard. Because maybe I'm naive, but I would expect that maybe the group of the people who work on this standard, because they know of these difficulties, will be able to agree on do something relatively primitive. But even something primitive, without all these fancy options, will be useful.
Mm-hmm.
And better than having nothing.
Well, I suppose what we can do is say include it, like you say, as this optional item, but as something. What I'll do is when I present this scope, this proposal for revision to SC32 at the Krakow meeting, I could kind of raise this as a separate sort of kind of issue in the sense of, you know, some of us believe it could, you know, potentially be its own project. You know, there's the proposal of having it as kind of this optional kind of feature, but just maybe to get their recommendations on what would be the best way to go, having it as a separate project or including it on this one. I don't see it being a big problem with it being a separate project. I mean, if there's really is enough kind of motivation for it among a kind of a subgroup of the community, and they are passionate enough about it, then, I mean, they can carry it on as its own project. But like I said, what I can do is I can include it as this optional item and then raise it for discussion within the context of ISO. Peter?
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on this last point, whether we should include it here or separate out a project. I mean, there's so much administrative overhead to run a different project that I think if we feel a query language is important, that then including it in the current exercise would be a lot more efficient. Just a comment.
Okay. Harold?
That's related to succession of sub-languages of common logic. So a horn sub-language would only need existential theories, and maybe we could look into that in conjunction with a special kind of theory language for only existential values, as I typed here in the chat.
Yeah, but I think these are sort of some of the things that Pat's kind of raising, that, you know, there'd be many different options here. I mean, you could have a very simple one, but of course, not everyone's going to be happy with that. It's not going to be conformant with other particular systems. And so, I mean, that's why I really see it. I mean, I agree with Peter that there is a certain overhead in starting up another project. But, you know, this is more than it might end up being more than just an item that's appended to the existing common logic project. It really can grow to be the size of the current standard just by itself.
Yeah.
So I'm just putting in here a little proposal so we can do it that way, so that and including it as an optional item, so that at least it is kind of recorded for posterity that this is again an issue that a subset definitely feels, you know, could potentially be within the scope, but if overall we feel that it's maybe it is an optional thing. But then I just want to get some feedback from ISO about the viability of actually having a new project with this. Okay, so let's see. I just want to also then now touch on a couple of the other new issues. So Chris Menzel raised the issue of a proof theory for common logic. This would be part of a, let's see, I guess a normative annex, meaning that it would be used to determine the conformance of, say, various implementations with respect to the proof theory. Chris, any comments on that?
Well, I mean, yeah, it could. I wouldn't say that's its purpose. I mean, if people are, if some application using common logic has got some underlying reasoner, then having a proof theory ready to hand might be useful. Or if they're thinking of implementing their own reasoner, for whatever reasons. I mean, conformance might be one easy way if the axioms are complete, especially. But I didn't have specifically, you know, conformance in mind. I mean, if somebody did have proof theory, then there would be an easy way of checking conformance with the proof theory. But yeah.
Okay, so I mean, just any kind of in ISO speak. I mean, if this becomes a what's called an informative annex, that's included there to, you know, be a guide to people who are implementing different systems to be conformant with common logic.
I mean, I think you call it normative because obviously an equivalent axiomatization would be okay, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, informative might be the place for it to go.
Okay. Fabian, a comment on that or on anything else?
Well, I just wanted to make the same argument, namely it should be informative. Whatever proof theory we use in the standard will likely not to be the proof theory that you would implement.
Exactly.
If you want to have an efficient reasoner. So it will be more there for theoretical reasons than, you know, than for as a way of implementing it.
Right. Okay.
Are we documenting this point?
Yep, I'm
okay.
Passing it.
Yeah.
I have another question. Did we discuss about ICL yet? I mean, there are some differences between CL and ICL.
Okay.
Some are rather delicate, like the, you know, I think the quantification in ICL is somewhat different by having numeric quantifiers. I would have to go back and look at the differences, but I remember that there were some. And then there, of course, the big difference is the that operator. Are there any feelings about including that in CL?
Okay, so there's we could maybe divide this up into two points. I mean, one would be features of ICL that could be included in the revision for Common Logic, so kind of approximating what's in ICL, effectively having Common Logic swallow the parts of ICL that are solid, because I think, as Pat's noting here, ICL still really has a lot of open issues in it. And so if we would want to maybe absorb within Common Logic what is on firm footing, and leaving other ones for future extensions, and again, another option being ICL being its own additional project. Do you see ICL as being something that is kind of a solid in the sense of the semantics of all of the different constructs, et cetera?
Well, I mean, the only logically interesting thing that is added to ICL is the that operator. The other distinctions were relatively small, and they shouldn't make a big difference. I mean, and the that thing, well, there is no proof of consistency, so that's making me a little wary. But if we would change the ICL, if we would change ICL in a way that it wouldn't have a strong comprehension scheme. So right now it's assuming the existence of all propositions that can be expressed in the language. If you take that out, then I don't see any problems, because any liar paradox you could construct would just be a proof of that this proposition couldn't exist. I don't know what Pat probably has strong opinions on that.
Yeah, the correction that Fabian suggests should definitely be done, because that was what, I mean, the way it is at the moment is simply a mistake. It was intended to not have a comprehension principle, and I wrote the semantics wrong. But I think it's not quite as simple, even if that's fixed, because although I have faith, motivated by an awful lot of experimentation, that the resulting language is consistent, I don't have a proof of it. And at least not without weakening the model theory. I mean, basically, the semantics of the that phrase is sort of a really interesting research area to me, but still a research area. I don't think we should try standardizing it. But as I said in the IRC, I think there is some surface syntax improvement, the basic improvements to CLIF syntax, which I think are worth looking at, and I think it's a good idea to put in numerical quantifiers, but we've got those on the list already. But I don't think ICL should be in the standard, really. I would feel very nervous about trying to do that.
So if he had a proof of consistency, would you then change your mind,
I'd feel a lot better, but I still think it's a little premature to say. I mean, we're talking about a standard. ICL is an exciting idea, but we should be publishing papers about it and getting people to use it and persuading the world to get excited as we are, and then maybe put it in a standard, but not put it in a standard before anybody knows anything about it.
Well, if you would have followed your own advice on sequence variables, they wouldn't be in that standard, would they?
No, they were in it. They're an old idea. We just get the semantics right, that's all.
There should at least be a consistency proof, though, before. I agree with Pat, at least to that extent. I don't think anything should go under a standard unless there is a rigorous consistency proof for ICL.
Yeah.
Sure, I agree with that. I mean, if you make that fix to the semantics, we should be. Okay, I will have to try to formulate a change to the semantics and see whether I can prove consistency. If you make that change, it shouldn't be that hard.
Send me an email about this, Fabian, because I've got lots of stuff that interests you.
Okay.
Okay. We'll kind of leave ICL, that construct as being outside the scope for this particular revision of Common Logic.
Yeah.
Is there someone else making a comment there? No? Okay.
May I make another suggestion? We should discuss at least... and if John would be here, he would have brought it up already. There is the tension, I think, between keeping Common Logic pristine as a logical system and the other one, making it easily usable for for people who don't can't be bothered to write out spell out everything in detail, but rather would like to use a lot of syntactic sugar on top of it. For example, if you look at the ICL guide, it contains a lot of terminology which is defined there. For example, all different. You have a term which is called all different, and it's axiomized in there, and it allows you to introduce a list of things which are pairwise distinct. The question is, these kinds of terms are extremely useful. The question is it within the scope of the standard to provide an appendix with a list of terms which then can be used by users and can be interchanged. Again, it's not a change of the semantics, it's just a list of terms and their definitions.
Right. Does that actually constitute just a kind of a basic ontology written in common logic?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have kind of also been more along the lines of kind of keeping the standard itself pure, but then having, say, some of these ontologies just as being more available. You know, a standard io.h for common logic ontologies.
But where would the standardized set of terms live?
Well, they wouldn't be. See, that, I think there's a distinction between, because they're just axioms in some ontology, that's not necessarily standard. It would be just like anyone else being, if they use some kind of term, and then the ontology has to be available.
Well, for me, it's not an ontology if it doesn't have any ontological commitments. And by defining all different, you don't have any ontological commitments.
Any conservative definition has no ontological commitments.
So yeah, so I mean, we could theoretically have common logic consisting only of the existential quantifier XOR and identity, right? But we add more booleans and we add a universal quantifier and all of that because it's damn convenient to have them. The same is true for having a term which is called all different. Now, why standardizing the universal quantifier and not all different?
But all different, the way you're defining it would be a relation that would have a conservative definition with it.
Well, that doesn't matter whether it's a relation or an operator. I mean, the identity symbol is a relation as well. We include it. I mean, it's technically not treated as a relation, but, false. It is a relation. So I'm just saying that John made the point, and I think it's well taken that if we consider it as something which is to be used by people who aren't logicians, providing some terms which make it easier to use it would be useful. Now, of course, John would go much farther. John would also like to introduce stuff which can't be defined that way. For example, would say something is a unary predicate, which can't. I mean, the way he wants to do it can't be defined.
What do you mean it can't be? I mean, you just have a definition of a unary relation.
Well, he would really want it to be syntactical error than to be used as a.
Oh, is that okay?
But let's forget about the syntactic aspect. The point, there's a benefit. If you put it in the standard, then even if it's not part of the semantics, you can, if you implement it, you can use a syntax, check in order to find errors. Using these terms. So, and Again, there was no big ontological commitment. It's just a definitorial extension, as you say. But it's useful to be able to declare something as a unary predicate. And probably any user will want to use it. So why force everybody to come up with their ad hoc definitions and not put a controlled vocabulary in the standard?
Okay. So let's go down the list here. David Witten.
The ironic thing is I just finished typing up what I was going to say. The all different as an extended logical kind of predicate is no different from the inclusion of hyperbolic functions, cosine, cosecant, etc. As a library in a programming language standard. So perhaps we need to introduce the idea of a library and then mention that as a library that is known to be useful. Definitely include any the definition of the library so that if systems don't actually have it, they can just declare a module that does the same thing.
Yeah, well, see, my point is that that's what an ontology is. I mean, you know, we have a common logic ontology repository where you can post ontologies written in common logic and. You know, you just write up the definitions of whatever you want there, and then you point to those. I mean, that's why we need to have namespacing, I guess, and other things. But I don't see that as being part of the standard of common logic itself. It's actually people actually using it to do things that are designed to be used for. Namely, one of them is specifying ontologies.
I agree with you, but I also know that there is some benefit to having an annex that of libraries in programming language standards. Because it avoids people having to reinvent the wheel, and it makes it in a solid format so that people can get it when they get the standard. It's just a suggestion that we have this idea of libraries as some kind of informative aspect definition similar to a module.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of the programming language libraries were done, of course, before there was the web, so there was no mechanism for actually having them out there. But sorry, Pat, go ahead.
Well, I just want to speak in favor of this, too, and I think Simon is going to come along and say pretty much the same thing. But I think the problem with I think the analogy with a program library is a good one. Your point about the web is well taken, but then that also introduces a new, a different argument for doing this, which is to establish a standard vocabulary. Interoperability in the W3C standards is absolutely hugely improved when the standard, even if only an informative annex where, provides a name that people can just use for commonly used things instead of them, not so much the problem is that them having to reinvent it, but they'll invent a new URI for their version. And then everybody has to go around and say, oh, well, I mean the same as what he means by that all over the web. And it really is a genuine source of enormous wasted effort. It's much better if there can be a single global name for commonly used things like that, and who can provide them. But as a sort of complimentary comment, John Sower has been arguing for this for years, you know. But he always phrases it in terms of a mathematical library, a library of mathematical constructs. And I don't think that's the right way to think about it. I think things like all different are useful, but I don't think it's particularly useful for us to define, let's say, I don't know, addition of real numbers or hyperbolic functions. Because how many people ontologies are going to need those? So,
Simon, just before I get to you, I just want to kind of respond maybe to this. So, so would you draw the line and say, okay, what about, you know, time ontologies? You know, like, you know,
well, I think that's exactly where the border is. And I know, I'm not going to sort of say exactly where the line should be drawn, but that's an area where there's a huge demand. People need them. They want to be able to use them. If they could provide them with one common solution off the shelf, everybody would love you. But there are at least three logically distinct ways of doing it, all in use out there. So you can't really say to the world, this is how to do it. And maybe it's too complicated to try and write the survey or something of that kind. But I mean, in the RDF and OWL worlds, if OWL had defined a temporal OWL that's in temporal ontology, I mean, huge swathes of people, you know, the BBC, Reuters, I mean, serious people out in the real world would have just been so happy because they've had to invent their own.
Right. Well, because I'm wondering if you know, again, this is something that's perhaps outside the scope of common logic, but actually is another standards project, which I hate to say this because, I mean, I'll get nailed right away, but, you know, the idea of standard ontologies seems to be what's going on here. And, again, not standard, you know, again, not to say that there is a unique standard time ontology, but as Pat was saying, that to have people agree that this is the URL for this particular axiomatization of a time ontology, and that that's what people would use rather than kind of saying, oh, yeah, what I call before is what he always also calls before. I don't know. Simon, go ahead.
Thank you.
Hey, well, first of all, I'm going to agree with just about everything that Pat says, but he predicted that. But there were some specific things that came up with some of the examples that people were typing that overlap to a certain extent with the discussion on whether to introduce, I think it's just limited to like the natural numbers in some form, into the universe of discourse of, or actually have them escape into the visible use, universe of discourse of common logic and, the subject of, or one of the examples that people used was like, I think, binary predicates or something like that. One thing I noted, in the, I can't remember if Fabian had a workaround on that, but it was a side effect of some of the discussions on, making, conservative definitions possible. And with the approach of completely hiding the name of a predicate that's being defined from being in the scope of any quantifier anywhere, or at least that's how I had understood it. But it seemed to me that, or it seemed that that made it impossible to use or to define something like binary predicate because you couldn't pass the predicate that you're trying to use as the definition to any other predicate. So all of the axioms that you could have inferred by being able to assert binary predicate would have to have been fully expanded. Like a bit of a problem since that's almost exactly the kind of case where you want to have as much of the heavy lifting already done for you. And so, making that means that if you can't use the two together, it seems to like weaken the value of both.
So what I wanted to kind of focus on today was not necessarily starting into the, discussion on potential solutions and potential problems with proposed solutions, mainly just, again, to kind of gather what these issues would be for the upcoming meeting. We will definitely be having future meetings where that will be the focus. So maybe if you could capture that question now, and then we'll make sure that it gets, you know, included in the agenda for an upcoming meeting we're actually discussing.
Michael, and just to clarify just a little bit, it's the reason why that's kind of a concern at this like early stages is that there are interactions between a lot of the different listed proposals that hopefully will show up when we start looking at them in depth, but it seemed like they were CLTL 1, there were various like aspects that like weren't figured out until a while later, different things interacted with other things. And, it seems like there are some obvious clashes that, might be like almost an item in itself, but are definitely a meta item, but I've spoken my concern and now I need to type it. So.
Okay. No, I agree. I mean, there is interaction between these various issues, but I just didn't want to get bogged down today in kind of arguing over potential solutions, because I think that kind of adds a little bit of time pressure that's not really, we don't really have to impose on ourselves. Like at this point, when we have, some period of time, I have to find out exactly how much time we have. When we have a period of time over which we can be thrashing out these issues, because some people kind of maybe had the impression early on that the purpose of this meeting was actually to solve these issues, and I really wanted to kind of distance that from simply raising the issues. So, Fabian?
Yes, I just wanted to respond to your slippery slope argument. I mean, I suggested to include definitions of terms that are useful, and you said, well, that's an ontology, and why not? And then we might as well include in a time ontology, and all be getting into basically a repository because there might be alternatives. I don't think that's a good slippery slope argument. I mean, yes, you can of course call any CL file an ontology, but as long as you have a definitorial extension of the logic, so there are no real ontological commitments. You haven't said anything interesting about the world, and you haven't made an interesting, and thus there is nothing to argue about. We can argue about what the best or most useful axiomatization of time is, or of Mariology, or something else, but there is no argument about something which is just a definitorial extension. The only argument is, do you like the term or not? But that's not really an interesting argument to have. And so, I certainly don't want to suggest that we put, a Mariology in the CL standard. That would be silly. But a terminology that is just, consists of terms which are, doesn't involve an intelligent ontological choice, and it just contains the terms that anybody will probably want to use if he or she is writing an ontology, seems to be not a big issue. So I just don't think that this is a hard boundary to find. I don't see the danger of the scope creep where we start to include ontologies in the CL standard.
Okay.
Whether we do that in a library form, I mean, clearly what we would, whether we include that in the paper copy of the standard or just have that sitting somewhere as a library and isn't as important to me, but I think having it as part of the standard, in some form of making it official, will just improve adoption.
Okay. So I'll follow my own advice that I gave, as I mentioned earlier, and I'll include this as an issue. I mean, we don't have to resolve it today, but I will at least raise it as, include it as an issue that will be kind of discussed.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. We are at 2:10 Eastern Time. Let's see. So, I just want to kind of maybe just do another round here. Are there any other issues that have not yet been raised that people want to include at this point? If not, I just want to return to the list that we kind of had before, the A through I. Okay. With regards to that initial list, A through I, I mean, I had some personal biases. Pat pretty well agreed with Pat on that. Oh, Terry, go ahead.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, am I muted now?
No, I can hear you.
Okay. the annotation question, I'm not sure how much you want to write down now, but it's something that we'll have to address, I think, in some depth, because every time you add annotation, you risk diluting the base that you're annotating. In other words, people will use annotation to put things in that they can't specify in the formal language. And so if you talk about a very complex annotation scheme that allows you to label certain things as
footnotes and other things as comments and other things as references or whatever, you know, as well as having things that essentially inform humans about what you're really trying to do with your logic. You lose formalisms. I didn't put that very well. Anyway, annotations. Make sure that that's a topic that we go through later on.
Oh, definitely. No, it definitely is in the list here for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I just wanted to just kind of draw attention to some of this idea of prioritization, and I agreed with Pat's earlier triage, that the additional connectives and the additional concrete syntaxes, I really didn't feel like those were items that would be really included. I don't know what people thought about those. I agree, actually, the people that have raised those issues, I don't think they're on the call today. John So is the one that was most passionate about infix syntax. And let's see. And then there was the additional connectives. I see that kind of popped up in the early days of the email discussion on this latest round. Yeah, I don't know. Personally, I would kind of almost leave those out because even putting them in might be distracting. I don't know. What do people think about that?
I mean, I'm not really sure what John wants, but if all he wants is another appendix which defines a concrete syntax where we have infix notation, well, if he's willing to put in the work and wants to do it, I mean, I don't see, I don't see big benefit of doing it, but at the same time, shouldn't interfere with anything else.
Yeah, but see, to me, it just seems like there's a phrase I think that Chris has used in the past as well. It's like, you know, in a way, Common Logic is like this family of languages, and where you have this common abstract syntax, and then various other formalisms are conformant with it, and so they're not part of Common Logic standard. They're simply conformant with the abstract syntax and its semantics as specified in the standard. And so as soon as you start putting on, I see a little bit of a slippery slope here where people can start adding on all kinds of concrete syntaxes to say, oh, we want them to have some sort of anointing, higher status than, other, conformant syntaxes. That's my personal bias there. Harold, you have a comment on that?
Maybe we could have some milestone dependent optional item. So only if we reach the mandatory part by a milestone date, then we even consider those optional ones.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of the connotation, I guess, of having having optional items. But I know, to me, it's almost like having an additional concrete syntax to be included officially within the standard. Because John will go ahead and work on it, is almost, again, there's a bit of a slippery slope argument is distracting in terms of then everyone can already propose their favorite concrete syntax. Let's put TPTP in as a concrete syntax that's officially part of the standard and normative annex. It begins to kind of start blurring there and diluting the standard itself. But again, that's maybe a little bit of a personal bias I don't necessarily want to impose. But I just want to get other people's comments on that. David Whitten, go ahead.
I was just bringing up the question that I saw on the mailing list about using XML as a parse tree syntax versus using UML and a controlled English descriptions. I think Harold has suggested that that's not a mandatory part. It's one of the reasons I got on the call to begin with. I just wanted to hear what the views of people are.
Pat, go ahead. Can't hear you, Pat. *7, unmute.
You're unmuted now. Go ahead, Pat.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, in that fuss over hearing, I just realized I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, yeah. I was going to ask you, Michael, when you talk about purity, whether, how is it that adding a, well, you talked about diluting the standard. Why would adding a concrete syntax in place of or adjacent to the abstract syntax be a dilution?
Well, if we start having how many do we start including then? Where do we draw the line?
We have one, definitely, just one.
We have one abstract syntax, but we have Cliff, we have the XML. We had the CGIF. That's still a normative annex, right? So then we would include infix. Do we want, what else are we going to be including?
Can I jump in on answering your question? So I am not particularly interested in infix notation, but let's say something which might be useful, although I don't want to do it, would be to, there are a lot of people who are used to OWL. They read OWL and are more familiar with that notation than with CL. So let's assume somebody comes up with a good suggestion of writing CL in a way that looks familiar to people who are used to OWL Manchester syntax.
Okay.
The advantage of it is addressing what people find convenient for, what they are used to. And different communities have different ways of, are used to different ways of writing the syntax. And I think that would probably improve the acceptance of the standards.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as we keep it all separate, in my opinion, doesn't dilute much. I mean, I have never read fully the conceptual graph part of the CL standard. I'm just not interested. Couldn't be bothered. But if other people like the conceptual graph notation, it doesn't distract me. I just ignore it.
My reason for wanting there to be a single concrete syntax in the core of the standard, and it would be a syntax that would be isomorphic to the abstract syntax, so it could be sort of used in place of it, is basically for implementation reasons. Right now, conformance is defined in terms of syntactic conformance is defined as your parser or whatever for your dialect is syntactically conformant if it parses your dialect into the categories defined by the abstract syntax.
Right.
But there's no way of me writing code to check that, because you can't transmit your abstract syntax parse tree to me in any form, because we haven't provided any concrete form for moving around information at the level of the abstract syntax.
Pat, I completely agree with your goal, but I don't think we need to limit us to one concrete syntax to achieve that goal. We could make one concrete syntax, the primus inter pares, which is what you suggested, right? And give it, formulate conformance in terms of mapping to this concrete syntax. That way we could have executable conformance criteria.
But bear in mind the requirement of isomorphism. All the appendices, I believe, I'm not sure about XCL, it's not really, I'm going to dismiss it, but certainly the CLIF and the CGIF, both are extensions of the core language in different ways. So they can't be used for this purpose. Now, I would like the XML syntax to be, I mean, that was originally my idea, was that the standard would be written against a single core syntax that would be XML-based. But it didn't come out that way, partly because there were objections and partly because I didn't have the confidence to do it. But it seems to me that would have been the most useful way of writing the standard. But then an actual sort of usable in the wild, in the real world XML syntax would necessarily have extensions to it and devices added to it that would be useful, but not, would render it no longer isomorphic to the abstract core syntax.
Okay.
So this would have to be a special, a special syntax that was written just to be in the core.
Well,
the one that could be used to transmit information around between computers. So software could use it.
Yes, well, maybe that's the solution then, to do that. I mean, we didn't address the question of having basically extensions of different, of the same dialect at all, because I think Adrian mentioned that he was interested in the, let's say, the in a fragment of let's say Cliff. You know, we haven't, that is not currently in the standard, really. We don't have, you know, fragments of Cliff, and it is the same, but maybe that's something to think about in the same way as you have different owl dialects, which are just varying in their expressivity. And the same, you know, maybe there is going to be some core XML version of CL, which is the abstract, which is mapping exactly against the abstract syntax. And the performance criteria could be formulated against that particular one. And then there are various extensions which are defined in appendices.
Well, maybe a way to handle this is to, since we have competent XML people here who have volunteered to do XCL properly, and thank you very much to them for that, politely ask them if they'd be willing, as a sort of side effect of their effort, to identify a subset of the language they're going to define that would play this role.
No, I mean, I think this is a good idea. I think it does fall into the scope of the issues that we have raised. So,
Okay.
Doug, you have Doug Fox on. Any comments?
Yes, Sam. Yes, ours. I put my comment on there that trying to use an L-like syntax, it would be quite limiting because L is requiring triples and CL is not restricted that way. A base syntax, I think we want to be able to convert it into XML, but XML has too much forcing URLs everywhere, and it's just too big to make it easily, you know, readable. I think a syntax that's converted to XML is fine, but trying to say that that's a core syntax, I would hope to have something to be simpler, just like you, just like RDF has simpler versions than RDF XML.
Doug, I think Doug, when I made this point, I was not suggesting these are two different issues. One is the issue whether there is going to be the concrete syntax, which is playing the role of it's basically the most important syntax or the primus inter pares, which is used for conformance criteria. The other question is, should there be only one syntax in the standard, or would we allow for more than one concrete syntaxes? And Michael's question was, how many would we allow? Is it, are we going to have a telephone book size standard? And my answer was, well, if there are many communities who prefer to see different ways of expressing first-order logic-like things, then we should have, and they step up and want to provide a concrete syntax, and I don't see disadvantage of including it. The advantage would be that they could use CL in the form that they're used to. And the old example was just an example for a community which, none of the concrete syntaxes we have currently in the standard would look like Manchester syntax, looks similar to Manchester syntax, but there are a lot of people who are familiar with Manchester syntax. So having a Manchester syntax for CL dialect would maybe be useful for them. I'm not part of the community, so I wouldn't be interested myself.
I would think it's fine to have alternate syntax, but a core syntax I think should be something that's more human readable, a KIFS-like syntax, which is close to standard logical syntaxes, closer to anyway. could be the core syntax, and then have a set of alternate ones for different communities is fine.
Well, I mean, I think that was kind of the intent of having the abstract syntax, though. I mean, that's why again, people have used the phrase, the metaphor that common logic is a family of languages, because they all have this, they all conform to the same core syntax with the same abstract syntax with the same semantics, and there are different concrete syntaxes that are syntactically conformant with those. I think the issue that's come up, today and lately, I've had it and Fabian, is that this idea of having, there's this one syntax that actually is kind of isomorphic to the abstract one, which is used for implementations, and you can then kind of use that as the reference for particular parsers, et cetera.
No, okay, I agree.
So we are approaching our time limit. So I don't know, I think we have, there has been a lot of progress. I think, one decision I think that people are recommending is that all of the issues that have been raised will kind of be part of the proposed scope for the revision, although some of these will be optional and others will be mandatory, kind of following Ed Barkmeyer's recommendation. And so I will be collecting, I'll be extracting all these from the chat, distributing them to the group, to the CL list. We can still have a lot of comments here. The I'm sort of pitching this to the Canadian group in a week and a half, and then there's the Krakow meeting that is in mid-October, and I think we'll be able to kind of have open comments up till then. So if there are additional things that people, or additional comments that people have, I can also have time to incorporate those. But I believe, given the relative silence on whenever I would ask for additional issues, I think we have pretty well exhausted that, and we've recognized the limits, or our limitations in terms of what's feasible to include. Any last minute comments then? Oh, yes, okay. So if people, other things come to mind, if people had something that they were distracted by another issue and forgot to include it, let's try to get this up into the list. And I will err on the side of being liberal, of including something as an issue. But if there are additional issues, and unless there are passionate, cogent arguments to make it something that's more than optional, that's the status of new issues. Simon, go ahead.
Just had one quick it's really a kind of a ISO procedural question, which is if something is just a corrigendum, I think there are some very, very tight restrictions on what changes can be made. And I think there's also some even tighter things if something could just, if there are typographic errors, there are sort of an emergency or mini corrigendums that can be done, but I'm not sure about it. But it's really a question for the ISO procedural things. What if only a corrigendum is possible? What of the things that are being discussed could go in something that would only be a corrigendum?
No. So this is more than a corrigendum. This is definitely something that's going to be revision.
Okay, so there's a full commitment to a revision, and
yes.
No need to worry about that.
Yeah. That's actually why I ended up volunteering to be the editor, was because if someone did step forward as editor, then a revision was not possible. So that's why I took the bullet for everyone to be the editor.
Yeah, you go, Michael.
Pat.
Yeah, I was just going to ask what the sort of process is going forward. Are we going to handle this all by email? Is there a way of taking votes? Are we going to have regular meetings? What's going on?
Okay, good question. Definitely what we can do is we definitely would want, I would like to have regular meetings, frequency to be determined, in which we can do things like votes. I mean, there is a facility in this chat room to do voting. And we can do other mechanisms for doing that. I think there are certain aspects where sometimes just you have to back up a particular proposal, a solution to an issue with actual some technical content. And so I think the email discussion, the email list is best for kind of putting out a proposed solution for comment, and then having a little bit of online discussion, and then having a meeting to actually kind of having a higher bandwidth venue for doing that. So I think we can have, we do want to have regular meetings. It would ideally be in this time slot while this time slot's available. Otherwise we can find an alternative. But I think this particular, the Ontolog infrastructure is ideally suited. Any problems with that or?
No, sounds good. Thanks.
Okay.
But comments should be made to the CL mailing list though.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, definitely. And I think, I mean, to a great extent, I don't think we have, I guess we haven't really started getting into the nitty gritty, so we haven't identified controversies yet. But I think people, there are certain issues that, either a fix has been proposed or people have a clear idea of what the fix would look like, and it's just a question of getting some of the work together. So I think a lot of these things can be, a proposal goes out, people comment online, we have a meeting to kind of ratify that decision. As Denise kind of was saying before too, I mean, this is an informal group from the perspective of ISO. So it's not like these votes are binding in some way. It is, these are the experts that are kind of we're doing this work and coming to consensus. I mean, we really do want to strive to coming to a consensus. What I'm doing as editor is simply to gather the materials and present them to ISO for their voting. But if we have a consensus on our end, and that if all the technical experts on the project have consensus, then it would be highly unusual for ISO to really overrule them. That hasn't been my experience. Hopefully, we don't run into that. Let's see. Any other points before we finish?
Well, we are having fun on the chat line.
Yeah, I haven't quite developed the skill. I'm too old to actually do two things at once here. Okay, where are we? Okay, so future meetings, I'm kind of recommending that we kind of use this time slot when available. To talk about some arithmetic ontologies, that can be a discussion for later. I think there might also be an opportunity to get a larger community interested in having a future session at some point that's kind of more of a informative session where we have somebody gives an overview of this, where CommonLogic is right now. We get some people who are actually working on applications. So we can get Cameron Ross talking about his software tools. In kind of a user community thing that's separate from what we're doing here, but I think it might be something where, getting interest up in the user community would also be good. Okay, so this one's not good for Pat.
I think this is not a good time slot because it's the usual Ontolog time slot. I mean, wouldn't we, there might be scheduling conflicts. If you want come to, let's say, bi-weekly or something like that, frequency, we are in trouble with the
two. I think Eva has a web-based tool that lets people sort of log in and select chunks of time that they can make, and then we can find a consensus.
Well, we can open up a doodle poll, is that what you're saying?
That's it, exactly. I couldn't remember the name of it, yeah.
Okay. I can open up a doodle poll. For a new time slot.
I mean, if this one has to be the one, then I'll just have to.
No, it doesn't have to be one. And Fabian's point actually is true. I mean, come January, there'll be the next Ontology Summit will be monopolizing this time slot. So, after January, we have to find a new one anyways.
True.
Okay, Frank, you have a comment before we, close?
I think that's left over.
Oh, okay.
I have a question. Are you going to use the CL mailing list?
Yes.
For communicating about this or?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll post a doodle poll. Oh, okay.
Monty, could you answer Terry's question about are you taking our consensus to your national body?
Yeah, I'll be
Canada.
Yeah, so I'll be to the national to my national body, I'll first take it to the national body because there's a telecon before the Krakow meeting, but the primary place where this will be presented will be at the Krakow meeting of SC32.
I know it's always useful to have multiple national representatives agreeing. Is it possible that if somebody could represent the consensus for U.S. as well? So we'll have two different bodies agreeing already?
Actually, we should strive for, votes. For revision, is Denise still on the line? I vaguely remember that you need five supporting countries for revision. I think Ed mentioned that a while back. So we would need more than one country to be supportive. But we should confirm that with somebody who is closely linked to the ISO process.
Offhand, do we have sort of enough support?
Well,
U.S., Canada, maybe Germany, Italy, U.K.?
Well, it needs to be countries who are represented in the ISO subcommittee.
On that particular subcommittee. Then.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, I'll double check on that. I mean, my impression was that wasn't going to be the issue, really. The issue was more of getting somebody to actually get the project going and shepherding along as an editor. That seemed to be the bottleneck, as opposed to guaranteeing at the ISO level that there's sufficient support. There was sufficient support before on the Common Logic project itself. I mean, so it became standard. I don't think people who had voted for it then will say, we don't want the revision now.
Well, you know, it's politics. So.
It's politics, yeah, but
there's no prospect of there being any serious opposition or anything.
No.
We did have someone from Japan involved at one point, but I'm not sure if he's still involved. I've forgotten his name. I'm sorry.
That's right. I forgot his name as well.
But we were recontacting him and seeing if he still wants to sort of take part.
Okay, I agree. I will contact members of the Japanese members of SC32.
I mean, it's always difficult to prevent via telecoms because of the time shift involved, but email helps a lot.
Okay.
Right, so somebody on the call who is not from the U.S., Canada, or Germany, I don't know everybody on this list, but
Alex is from Russia.
Oh, yeah. So we would have to look at whether Russia is on the subcommittee.
And Tanil Tamit from, where is he? Was very involved in the writing of the current draft.
Oh, yeah, Finland. I think he's Finland.
Or nearby. I forget which one. Estonia? Whatever.
Frank, did you have some comments? Yes, this is the national standards wise. We're not just talking about random people who've been working on Common Logic, but this is something that I'll be guaranteeing or in pursuing is to guarantee that there is enough support at the SC32 meeting. So this SC32 meeting will have all of the standards, all the countries will be there kind of represented with their various delegations. So that will be the point where we kind of get the go-ahead.
But they will have to approve the revision. But
yes.
If they approve it, I think at least they're expected also to provide a technical expert. And so, ideally we have already somebody who has been earlier associated with ISO, but if it's, you know, if you find somebody, even if it's more or less random, if the person is then able to serve as a technical expert, then that would solve the problem too. And whether that's possible or not depends a little bit on the country. So for the UK, it's not that simple. You can't just volunteer. The US, for example, is very liberal about that.
The other issue I was going to point out was that when we worked on other standards, we found it very useful to use bug tracking stuff or something to track the individual issue. It's not unusual for there to be scores, not hundreds of separate issues that need to be addressed by the standards committee. So that each clause essentially in the standard, if there's a debate over it, gets turned into a separate issue.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, I mean, ISO has their own paper way of tracking issues, but it would be good to get some issue tracking software up online so that we can use that as an informal group here. And again, following Denise's disclaimer, I mean, this is the informal group, not the ISO group. So, I don't think the Ontolog Wiki would count as an issue bug track. We'd want to have something that actually can track.
Yeah.
Track or something like that.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll also look into that.
And the other question is, in the past, there's usually been one ISO technical committee, like L8 in the United States, or sometimes another one, which was the principal venue for developing this stuff. And I don't know if you plan on doing that via the Canadian version of L8 or do it through the U.S. version. But sometimes countries will allow cross-membership from some of these working groups from outside of the country in question.
Right.
So L.A. used to have... I know the ISO 11179 standard, the editor was Canadian, whose name eludes me at the moment.
Ray Gates?
Yeah, Ray Gates.
Yes.
So you don't necessarily have to be a U.S. resident to be involved with L.A. The problem is that ISO... The starting price for ISO memberships for even individuals is $500 a year.
Well, so I'm working with Ray, like, on this. So the meetings, the Canadian group meetings that I participate in, Ray is the one that's there as well. So I'll check with him as regards to your question. Okay. Any final comments before we wrap up? We're a little over time. Again, I apologize for the late start. But everything's working so far so good here on my computer. Okay.
Well, great session.
Yes. And I'll be sending out some summaries later on today or tomorrow.
And of course, I will also later today capture the chat transcript and put the recording up later today or tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you very much, everyone, and looking forward to talking to everyone soon. Bye-bye.
Oh, bye.